Okay, so you know I'm a little fraudulent as I start this. Let's transport ourselves back to about 12 minutes into the third quarter of that football game last Sunday. Is that what you were expecting? That the score could be 28-3 and the Patriots could have the three? Might you have been thinking that your dreams were dashed? That all you had hoped for and anticipated was not going to come to pass? Tom Brady, you are the one we had been expecting to earn a fifth ring. Back here, you had gathered with your friends, you had cheers and hops, you had sliders and guac, you had team shirts, you were hoping, you were wanting. Dare I say this is not what you were expecting? But there it was, blatantly and boldly displayed on the screen, 28-3. This isn't what you had imagined. So can you go back and feel what was happening at that point? Confusion, disappointment, dismay. How could it be so different? But there was still a minute or so in the third quarter. There was time on the clock, and there were rules for overtime. And it turns out that Tom Brady was the one you were expecting. He did earn that fifth Super Bowl ring. You need me to tell you that, right? He did his job, and the team did their jobs. And the dismay of 28-3 in the third quarter became the hoots and hollers and confetti and champagne and duck boat parade in the slushy cold streets of Boston. 34-28. Billy Buxton was right. Sunday was the day that the Patriots had made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. We know how that game turned out. We may not have known what the final score was going to be when Lady Gaga was dropping down from the sky, but we knew there would be a final score. We may not have been up to speed on the NFL rules for overtime, but we knew that there were rules and a plan that would be followed. It was a football game, and it would end, and the final score would be known. Sports are relatively tidy that way. There is a point when the game is over. Like it or not, win or lose, there is a point when the game is done. Kingdom building and running with God is not nearly so defined. Timing is everything, they say. And timing being what it was this week, images and metaphors of football poured into my head and heart Monday morning when I was reflecting on this passage from Luke's gospel. It's like John the Baptist was thinking Jesus and the kingdom were going to be birthed into being with the relatively timely rules and schedule of a football game. John was planning on Jesus doing his ministry in a way that would make that happen, in a way that would have the kingdom in place by the time the clock ran out. It makes sense for him to think that way. John had complete trust and devotion to God, so why wouldn't he expect that God would come through? God had promised a Messiah. The Messiah had come in Jesus. It's all in place and ready to go. God is real. God is active. John is on board. Until it is the biblical equivalent of 28-3 in the third quarter. John is in prison. And the Messiah is supposed to free the prisoners. Herod and Rome are continuing to rule with violence and abuse of power. The Messiah has not overtaken the government. This doesn't look like what John had imagined the kingdom would be. Jesus isn't doing and acting in the way he thought the Messiah would. In his prison cell, John is likely feeling like a Pats fan did for a whole lot of Sunday's game. Fans didn't have the ability to go down to the sideline and tap Tom Brady on the shoulder pad and give pointers or ask what's going on. John didn't have the ability to leave his prison cell. But he did have followers who could go out for him. And he sends two of them off to talk to Jesus, to find out what was going on. This doesn't look right. This isn't the kingdom as John had expected it would be. John sends two of his disciples to talk to Jesus and ask him, "Are you the Messiah, or are we to wait for someone else?" And they do just that. And while they are there in Jesus' presence, in the course of a few hours, Jesus healed many from diseases, distress, and evil spirits. To many of the blind, he gave sight. This is what the Messiah is doing? I imagine them standing on the sidelines, baffled and confused. Likely they had been planning the Messiah acting differently. Maybe like Belichick calling a play and then everyone getting on board and doing their job and a dramatic explosive shift in the world and the kingdom is born. And as they stand there baffled, Jesus tells them to go back and let John know what they have seen. The blind see, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, the wretched of the earth have God's salvation hospitality extended to them. So go back to John, Jesus tells them. Tell him these truths, these healings. Yes, I know it isn't what you had imagined, but it's what was prophesied. It's what I quoted in my first sermon. It's what the Messiah does. Gets close to and responds to the most hurting and needing, one by one, person by person. It's a slow process. It's an intimate process. It's a vulnerable process. Jesus goes about birthing the kingdom by getting deeply immersed in the everyday reality. For Jesus, the action is not in an environmentally controlled stadium where the rich and connected are welcome. It's in the public landscape where there are no barriers to entry. For Jesus, it's about removing the things that constrain and limit. Our sacred story doesn't say how he does it or how people feel after it has happened. Likely, his actions engender both blessing and challenge. The details, though, are left out, I think on purpose. I think to prevent us from getting attached to specifics, which is so human and natural for us to do. We have these wonderful brains, and they are set up to organize and make sense. They are important, and we are supposed to use them. But we have a tendency to overuse them. To turn to them first to analyze and figure it out. And what Jesus is doing is inviting us to take a different first step. No, we don't have to forget our minds and file them on a back shelf. They are there for us, they are needed for kingdom building. But they are not step one. The first step is to open to God, to turn to the holy, to pay attention to healing and hope that is active in the world, to remember whose we are, to know that God is present. The first step is with our spirits. Our first step is to see how we are oriented in the world. Our first steps may be varied. They may vary very much based on where we are on our own journey. And they may range from remembering, or discovering, or seeking to accept that there is holy love loose and acting in the world. Love that enfolds us. Love that is creating a future. Love that is more powerful than any human creation. Lame walk. Wretched are welcomed. Stuff that doesn't make logical sense happens. not because of divine hocus-pocus, but because of divine love. Love that cannot be constrained. Love that cannot be contained. Love that cannot ever be fully described. And the first steps to that love are orienting our hearts to that love and letting it enable us and guide us to receive and act in accordance with it. Which gets me back to football, right? That's what we're all back on this week, I think. I'm even trying. In our materialistic, militaristic, scarcity and fear-based culture, it's pretty normal to sit here and react like third quarter disbelief. Love being what will heal, letting God get close and reshape us is what is life-giving. Getting up close and personal with the aching is transforming for both of us. Wait, really? What? Is this what you were expecting? The healing and the kingdom are underway, but they aren't spreading with the precision of the play of the Patriots. They are spreading with the shaky knees and weary arms of us. Disciples. Disciples. Not fans observing and cheering, but disciples entering into the fray, feeling the hurt, and daring to trust in the love of God, which will not be stopped. Amen.